brutal facts. And sometimes real estate feels like we're fighting a battle. And I imagine Christy last night probably felt like the beginning of a battle that's brewing. Developers, neighbors, you know, we could be in a battle with another agent about what to do. And so I found this Winston Churchill quote. And again, Winston Churchill, you all know his history. But he said, the truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it and ignorance may deride it, but in the end, there it is. And that's what's so hard in our profession is being honest and brutally honest and stating the facts, because that's what we have to deal with, and it's finding an appropriate way to deal with the facts. And so, this is a book I read, Good to Great, and there's so many great stories in here. I found a really interesting one yesterday. Has anybody ever heard of Admiral Jim Stockdale?
Yes.
Who was a captain? Spent 8 years in the Hanoi Hilton during the Vietnam War. And please don't mistake, this is not a correlation. Real estate is not like Hanoi Hilton. But the story that comes out of this I thought was really interesting. And Jim Collins was walking along with Admiral Stockdale on the campus while he was researching and doing all these studies for his book. So as they're walking along, Jim asked Admiral Stockdale, who didn't make it out? And Stockdale said, oh, that's easy. The Optimus. The Optimus? I don't understand. The Optimus. Oh, they were the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And then Christmas would come, and Christmas would go. Then they'd say, we're going to be out by Easter. And Easter would come, and Easter would go. And then Thanksgiving, and then it would be Christmas again. And they died of a broken heart. So there was a real long pause, and then Stockdale turned and said, this is a very important lesson. You must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the discipline to confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. And I feel like a lot of times we're finding ways to confront the brutal facts of our clients. This house is just not going to appraise. They can't afford to sell it. We can't get the loan. There's all kind of brutal facts that personally affect people. So I thought it'd be interesting to have a discussion about that. And the question we're trying to answer today is, how do we use the brutal facts to help our clients make good decisions? And a lot of this is not just what Alan and Reynolds say. You know, where a lot of this information comes to guide you is the code of ethics, license law, the brokerage agreement, and then company policy. And I want to read what Article 1 says in the Code of Ethics. When representing a buyer, seller, landlord, tenant, or other client as an agent, realtors pledge themselves to protect and promote the interests of their client. This obligation to the client is primary, but it does not relieve realtors of their obligation to treat all parties honestly. When serving a buyer, seller, landlord, tenant, or other party in a non-agency capacity, realtors remain obligated to treat all parties honestly. That's what the code says. That's what's different about y'all and real estate agents, is we follow a code. We have to treat everybody honestly all the time. And I know y'all read the license law book probably at least once a week, how to deliver offers, present offers. And you read your brokerage engagements and contracts all the time. We know, too, because you never have any questions about what they say. So you look through those, and they do set up guidelines on how we're to handle things. But not everything is covered in Code of Ethics. You know, specifically, if this happens, you do this. Which is why we wanted to talk today about how to help you understand what to do. And there's two steps in creating the climate of truth with your clients. You know, leading with questions, not answers. You know, we don't ask questions to belittle folks or make them feel incompetent. We ask questions to gain understanding. You know, why are you selling your home? We engage in dialogue and debate, not coercion. We always want to be willing to understand both sides of the argument, because understanding both sides of the argument is the best way to strengthen ours. And it can be frustrating sometimes. You may know before you even begin that your side is the right side, but you have to understand the other side too, so that you can find a way to confront these real facts. Because we all know at the end of the day, however much faith you have, some things just aren't going to happen. We could probably all list an appraiser's name who has just never gone up in their appraisal. I mean, this, you can't just hope, oh my gosh, I hope he gets hit in the head and updates his appraisal. It's not going to happen. So you have to look at the brutal facts. So let's look at some scenarios. Hopefully this will be fun. You're representing the seller, and you've seen more than one offer to purchase their property. What should you do? That's what the code says. Present all offers as reasonably possible, you know, as quickly as possible. And so, what should you be asking? What should you be asking yourself?
If they want us to tell the other parties.
That's a great question.
About the offer, do they want us to give these, some of us, they just tell them what the highest offer is.
Yeah, you have to get, it's ultimately their decision, right? We can only present them, we've got to present them with the option. So, they do have an option. Do they want you to disclose to all parties that there are multiple offers? And if you're looking at both sides, how could we be honest and treat these multiple buyers honestly? Would it be right for them to know that there's multiple offers?
Yeah.
Not all, that seems like the honest thing to do. And that's our company policy. But understand, you have an obligation to represent the seller. So, you need to explain their options to them. And so, what are some options for multiple offers? These are what sellers can do. They can choose one offer, sign it unchanged. They can elect not to accept any of the offers presented. They can decide to make a counteroffer on one and reject all the others. They can elect to make a counteroffer on one and simultaneously make contingent counteroffers on the others. That is frightening.
Yeah.
They can elect to make contingent counteroffers on two or more of the offers. That scares me a little bit. So, how do you confront the brutal facts with your client? You know, one would be explaining them, what do they do? Do they want you to disclose to all parties that there are multiple offers and ask them to come back and submit their final best offer by a certain time? Do they not want to? Trying to get them to understand what the other parties are feeling, that's the honest thing to do. Because if you're cooperating with another broker in town and you're the agent that didn't disclose there are multiple offers, you're probably going to run into that agent again. And we want to be treated honestly and have a fair chance too. And if you give people a fair chance to make their highest and best offer, that's the best thing you can do for them. They have to make a decision of what their best offer is. So, making sure your client understands their options, but also helping them address the risks that are involved. Elect to make a counteroffer on one and simultaneously make contingent counteroffers on the other. You're still really not under contract. They could all fall apart. They could all, what if they know each other? I mean, that happens. So, be fair and be honest and present all the options to the seller and help them understand what they should do in a situation like this. Sorry, let me go back. Any other questions or thoughts about who's been in the situation? Who's doing it? Okay. How did you feel, Tara? Did your client win the property?
Oh, no, I've been on the selling side.
You've been on the selling side? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is rather than the seller. Who had negative feedback from the buyer's agents who did not win the offer? Anybody?
They were disappointed.
Disappointed?
Didn't get anything negative. They were disappointed. They were aware that there was a second offer, and they appreciated the fact that we told them.
That's right. That is the best thing to do. Give them a chance to submit their best offer. And if they don't win, you know, that's on them.
What I saw something where I read, not in the include, what is it where you say I'll pay X amount over the highest and best up to a buyer can submit that on their highest and best? Like, the property's listed at 195, there's multiple offers, and in the contract they can put I'll pay $1,000 above the highest and best up to 205.
I read
that somewhere, and it's happening more and more.
That's,
and I don't know if that should be slide.
No,
I heard that. It's called
something.
Yeah, I forgot. I read that article. I forgot.
It's not a bad offer. You're saying
it's almost like
multiple offers, but we're going to go $1,000 over what anybody else gives you.
As long as you get a single certain amount.
So if someone sends 198 and you sent 197, you agree to go to 199.
If you can find that article, Kathy, I'd love to see it. Yes, Jan.
When my daughter bought her house in Colorado Springs, that's what she was advised to do by the buyer's agent, was to do the 1,000 above whatever anybody else offered.
Okay.
Did it work?
And then she found out nobody submitted another offer. I did not care for her agent.
Has anybody ever had a seller, when you've had multiple offers, tell you not to disclose that there are multiple offers on the property? Yeah. What was the reasoning behind that?
Because they were afraid that it would run them all off, and that has happened.
Yeah, it does. People didn't want to be in a bidding situation. Well, it's a two-edged sword.
Yeah. It is. You just have, as Randall says, you have to explain both. Yeah. It's the seller's ultimate decision.
Yes.
It is our policy, however, and of course, now that you do make everybody aware they're going to belong. However, who has the final say?
The seller.
The client, exactly. So if they say no, that's all you can do.
I just wish we had multiple offers, even if your buyer wasn't the one that was chosen, that somehow they signed off on it when rejected. Because there are times with multiple offer situations that I really question, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be rude, I really question whether or not my offer was presented in the correct way, or who is. I wish there was a form or something we had that showed, buyer or seller rejects buyer's offer, something that shows that on the form. Because sometimes that's the hardest part trying to explain to a buyer is, well, are you sure they saw my offer? We do have the ability to go and present the offer, but to ask the listing agent to do that is really difficult. So that I would say, on what Steve said, not being disappointed, but really big question sometimes, was my offer even looked at?
And as the seller's agent, that's something to think about too. How do you provide closure to the buyers that didn't win? That can go a really long way.
That's crazy.
And you can't explain to them, well, it's not by $100. You can't give all those details, but explain to them, you had a really great offer. There was one better, but the seller did, met the seller's needs. They ultimately chose, I presented them all, and the seller chose this one. And so it's really tough because the agent's going to ask you, what's most important to your client? Cash, no contingencies? That's really important. No, what, if I'd known you wanted to close 2 weeks earlier, they've been notified that there's multiple offers, and that agent has to educate their buyer to make their best offer. And if they didn't make their best offer, if they left something on the table, that's a risk, unfortunately. Yes, Christy?
There is a form, notice to reject, offer, counteroffer. Maybe you could send that over if you were the buyer's agent and ask the listing agent to have it signed and sent back. It's form F-144.
F-what?
F-144. And I think basically, yeah, so I mean, the buyer or the seller. And you can leave the box and let them check it. I mean, they may not get it back to you, but if you could try.
Alan, I'll talk, maybe we'll do a lunch and learn on this based on y'all's feedback to dig a little deeper into some of these situations.
Brent.
Yes?
If this is becoming more common, what happens if you get two of those?
Two of what?
Two of the offers.
Pay $1,000 more than a high price.
Then they go down like the top of the same? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could, a seller could look at, okay, which one's closing first? Or which one? I mean,
the
buyer still wouldn't have to
pay
that.
I have a hard time believing capital may be identical. I would start looking at the lender. You know, the money at the end of the day, that's what matters. Do they have the ability to bring you the funds? And so, if that happens, come to our office. We'll help you sort it out. But you're right, yes. We've been in multiple offers for, talking about 3 years. Yeah. So it's peak season. It's happening all the time.
I think Tom was left where I heard that the 49ers did a play on that.
I've been reading about it, especially in places where the inventory is so low. And it just turns
into a difference. So here's the other side. You're representing a buyer who's competing with multiple offers on the property. What do you do? Who's been in the situation?
You ask them to do their highest and their best. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the property and clean up their offer, like it is clean as it possibly can be.
You know, present those brutal facts, tell them make their best offer. And have faith that if that is their best offer, you can't be disappointed with the effort you put forth. You know, if that's the best you can do, that's the best you can do.
And you can't have a contingency there. That's another rule of act.
It's called an escalation clause. That was going to drag me nuts.
Escalation clause. So that may be an option in this situation. Add an escalation clause. You know, it's like eBay. You're willing to pay $20,000 for this car. Man, if I can get it for $15,000, that sure would be sweet. But understanding the risk. And that's our job, to explain to our clients, to be brutally honest with the facts. If you do this, you may not be the winning offer. If you sleep on it, it might be gone. So you have to present that in a way that's not creating urgency, but you're helping them understand what's really important. Is this property important enough for you to put forth your best effort right now? And here's what could happen if you do. The price may get up above the list price. That's happening. It may not appraise. You don't want to pray that it doesn't, but have faith knowing that if this price goes up by $6,000 or $7,000, you still may get it for closer, just barely above the list price because of the appraisal. And so there still is a chance, but you have to present those facts that if it's listed for $150,000 and you bid $157,000 and you get it, it might only appraise for $155,000, $154,000. So, but you've got to be willing to commit to pay $157,000 and those are the facts, but still hoping that it might change some. Alright, this is the toughest one. You're representing two different buyers who are interested in purchasing the same property. Has anybody been in this situation? Okay. There's three in the back. What did What did y'all do? Janet, what did you do?
I still had another client interested in the same property.
And you told me you had another client interested in the same property. What did each, you said that to both clients?
Right.
And so what happened after that?
Neither one of them really were excited about that property, so they went out and bought something totally different.
Okay.
But I knew I was showing both of them the same one.
What did you do, Christy?
Same thing. I had one house in Piedmont. They came in 5 minutes apart. One came in at 7, and one came in at 7:30 for second showings. But they do look at you differently when they know that it's property. It's hard. You just have to tell them whoever buys it first.
What did you do, Tara?
Well, it was my listing, and I had two cycles. So I was representing the seller, and then I showed it for a buyer customer, and then another buyer customer called family to see it, and I was like, and I talked to Jenny about it, and I was going to have Jenny, I was going to refer out the other buyer to Jenny or another agent if they got serious, but they actually got serious.
So only one of them made the offer?
One of them didn't make an offer in both house.
Okay.
But the other one decided not to buy.
Your buyer brokerage agreement barely even has a sentence about this. All it says is you have the right to show property to multiple buyers. That's literally all it says. The code of ethics really doesn't go into this, but code of ethics is a blanket policy to do what? Remind you to treat all parties fair and honestly. And really, that's all we recommend you do at this point is just notify if you are representing two clients and they both say, you know what? Alan, I think I want to write an offer on this house. Do you wait until they say, let's write an offer on this house? I think I want to write an offer on this house. You know, when the time comes, you have to let them know. I just need to let you know I have showed this property to other clients. And then they may come up with a litany of questions. They may not care. They may say, you know what? I don't really like the kitchen anyway. The backyard's not the... Or worse, well, who are you going to represent? We drove all the way out here. You're not. We want to buy this house. And that's when you have to decide what to do. It may be best to refer them to a designated agent at our office. They want full representation. But you have to confront those brutal facts immediately, because the longer you wait to do that, the more misleading it's going to feel to them. And if they didn't read that sentence in the buyer broker agreement, it's not even like a full sentence, it's like part of the sentence. And so there's not a lot of case study on this, but that's starting to happen too with low inventory. It can happen on listings. A lot of that is used as a tactic in new home subdivisions. Well, hey, someone just came through here 5 minutes ago and they said they're coming up to write an offer this afternoon. You have to understand, if it's coming from the listing agent, their obligation is to the seller. But if you're representing the buyers, you're not representing the seller. You just need to be honest and just simply disclose, I need to let you know I have another client that has expressed an interest in this property. And you can't divulge information about your client to another client. You signed a brokerage agreement. So you can't say, wow, I'm meeting them at 6. Why don't you come by at 4:30? We'll get your offer in. You have to give them the facts and ask them the questions to let them make the decision. That's what our job is, to help guide them through this process. Do you want to wait till tomorrow to see this house? Do you want to wait? When would you like to make an offer? Would you be disappointed if someone else purchased this home before you did? They've got to make the decision. We just got to help them understand what the best decision is for them to make at this very moment. So the Stockdale paradox, this is what Edmund Stockdale came up with. Retain faith, you'll prevail in the end, regardless of the difficulties. And at the same time, confront the most brutal facts of your current reality, whatever they may be. And that's not easy to do. But if you're able to adopt this path, you will dramatically increase the odds of making really good decisions. And ultimately discover that a simple, yet deeply insightful concept for making big choices. That's why our profession still exists. We help people make good decisions on big choices. And purchasing a home is still the largest transaction investment that the average American is involved with. And so don't be brutal about addressing the facts. I know you understand that difference, but these are the facts, and they're not really going to change. So you have to find a way to address that in your client's understanding. And I'll leave you with this quote. The real problem is usually two or three questions deep. If you want to go after someone's problem, be aware most people aren't going to reveal what the real problem is after the first question. So you have to ask questions. We do have a lot of the answers, but we have to help our clients find the answers through our own understanding and ask questions and dig a little deeper. It's exhausting. It's tough. Because you know what's going to happen, but you have to help them understand what they need to do. Because you have to hit realities head on. And be honest and present the brutal facts and faith that you will prevail in the end. So, we know you all can do it. You're already doing it. It's just a reminder to keep doing it and think about how you can help your clients make really great decisions on the big choices they have to make. And they will be loyal to you for your entire